If you're tired of bad news, if you need some positivity, if you want to support small businesses, then welcome to Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Kaysville's own mayor, Tammy Tran. Here, you'll get to see the best of humanity from within Utah's hidden gem, Kaysville City. Every month, you'll discover small businesses, hear unique and incredible stories, and understand the difference you make in this wonderful city. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this podcast so that you'll never miss a chance to find a new business to support and learn what makes a city like this one work as well as it does. So join us as we explore Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Tammy Tran.
Sean, thanks for being here.
Mayor, thanks for having me.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. So I'm here with Sean Slater with LSI. You own LSI.
Correct.
And mostly just kind of wanted to let you kind of explain what is LSI. You've been around for years and years, and we hear about your company quite a bit because we're in a lot of similar circles. And just sort of, yeah, get to know you a little bit better.
Well, I appreciate you having me. And we've known each other for a long time.
Yes.
We've known each other.
We have.
I don't know, maybe 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited to have this opportunity to sit down with you. And I've followed you for a long time in your business and politics, and just excited to be here.
Well, thank you.
So our company is a Davis County company, started mm-hmm. 50 years ago, started in Bountiful, and then I acquired the company from the original five principals over 30 years ago and moved north. We were doing a lot of work with Hill Air Force Base and wanted to be closer to the base and moved outside of the South Gate shortly after I'd acquired the company. When I first acquired the company, most of our work was focused on Department of Defense, business development, and contract execution. And you've been in this business a long time, as we have, as you know. There's a up and down in the budgets and mm-hmm. different changes in leadership. And shortly after I had acquired the company, we decided that we were going to replicate what we had done with the Department of Defense into the FedCiv agencies. So
okay.
we started working with the Department of Transportation, Health and Human Services, Department of Energy, Homeland Security, Department of Education, every one of those non-defense federal agencies. And really, and while I think in Utah we're so aligned and everyone knows us as, oh, we have this connection to the Air Force and Hill Air Force Base, the majority of our work is actually in these FedCiv organizations, and we're doing a lot of work with state and municipalities as well.
I didn't realize that. Okay, so tell us, what exactly are you doing, or
so
broadly?
What was interesting is the company was founded by these World War II veterans, mm-hmm. and
which one of them was your
one of them was my grandfather.
Your grandfather, okay,
who didn't bring me into the company,
and
actually.
That's Jerry.
That's
okay.
Jerry. That's my
your grandfather. Okay.
I mean, he was my hero, and he and my grandmother had kids very young. My parents had kids very young. I was only 40 years apart in age from my grandparents, and 40 years apart from my grandmother, 45 from my grandfather, and they were. I was very close to them, and really admired my grandfather. But it wasn't my grandfather that brought me into the company. It was another member of the team that had a client that needed support at the University of Utah in this lab where I was working.
Oh, okay.
And so I did a little project for them. They brought me in as a contractor, and I never left. And then I ended
up... That's fantastic. Then you bought the whole company.
Then I bought the company shortly afterwards, and...
That's so great, and you just continue to grow.
So I've had one job my whole career, mm-hmm. which that never happens now.
Yeah.
Right? But when I had acquired the company, a lot of that work was working for companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Northrop and ATK, the large, mostly defense contractors. And we would help them with identifying opportunities. We would help them with building proposals, building winning proposals. It was a big part of our team. And then help them on the post-award. Anything that happened after the contract was awarded, we would help them with, you know, interfacing with some of these tough organizations that you know, right? DCMA, DCA, DFAS,
right.
Help them get paid. Even the big companies, some of them that were very mature organizations, they struggled with this, struggled with basic contract management. So that's how we built this business. And then as I said, I wanted to replicate what we had done inside of the Department of Defense. I felt like we had really penetrated the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, and then we started moving into these other organizations. Department of Energy was sort of a natural progression for us, doing the same thing. What happened was we started, there was a point in time where we had won a $30 billion contract for General Dynamics in Detroit, Michigan.
That's a big one.
At the time, it was one of the largest contracts ever. Now there's these major,
$30 billion is a big contract.
And they hired 3,000 people immediately. And it was so transformational for that part of Northern Detroit, which had 20% unemployment or more. I think that was conservative that they were saying 20% unemployment. And we got a call from Governor Jennifer Granholm's office shortly after that, who said, "The governor would like to come to see you. We'd like you to come to Lansing, Michigan, and tell us, how did you create 3,000 jobs in one of the most challenged areas in the country at that time, and still is today?" So we went in there and told her this story, and she said, "The state of Michigan is going to hire LSI, and we want you to create jobs for us by winning business for other Michigan companies."
Really?
That's how we started down that path.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And
So
that was over 20 years ago. And then when she was governor, she was very active in the governor's associations, and she did a great job evangelizing what we had done for the state of Michigan. We still have that contract today after all these years.
That's incredible.
In fact, they just increased the scope, and we got this new award working inside of Michigan. But we got a lot of visibility with states like Oklahoma and Georgia and Rhode Island. And then eventually Governor Huntsman approached us and said, "We're going to change Utah's economic development approach," and brought us in as part of that. And we've been working for the state of Utah ever since as well, in their working directly for the governor's office, managing their economic development, which has been an amazing opportunity. And as we've seen Utah grow over the last 20 years, I'm really proud of what our team has done in building that strategy and then seeing it come to execution. Mm-hmm. We have this ongoing joke. So we've also done a lot of work in the state of Virginia for the governor's office and for a lot of the municipalities in the state of Virginia. Over the last 20 years, the state of Virginia and the state of Utah have battled back and forth for who has the best economy in the United States. We built both of those strategies 20 years ago for the state of Virginia and for the state of Utah.
Really?
Gosh. So
that's very impressive.
And we've been doing a lot of, we got pulled into doing a lot of other things, such as creating jobs for unemployed veterans. And that led to creating jobs for TANF eligible individuals. And to be TANF eligible, you have to be 200% below the poverty level with at least one child in the home. And most of these individuals are women, had never been in the workforce, had never didn't have it training or any education. And we've seen thousands of families transform through employment.
That's really neat.
It's been an interesting journey. Now, today, we're doing a lot of work with the Department of Commerce and the Department of Labor. We have a number of contracts with both the Department of Commerce and Department of Labor, creating complex ecosystems, which has been really interesting. So not only are we creating jobs in a region, but we're also looking at supply chains, and we're looking at workforce development, and working with the state or the municipalities to create objectives around revenue and budgets. And
gosh,
so that it's been
honestly that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think what has happened that you probably have experienced too over the last few years, so many of these federal funds have been allocated to states and municipalities through formula grants. And a lot of these organizations have changed that, where now the organizations have to compete for these federal dollars. And when we talked about this when you and I were in D.C. a few months ago, when the earmarks disappeared in 2010, most of the Senate and House representatives in the U.S. Congress would fund these major projects for their districts or for their constituents through earmarks. So when that went away, that really changed the way the Congress allocated funding for especially municipalities and whatnot. So until last year, there have not really been earmarks. And even last year, the rules were you might get 7 or 8 earmarks as a representative, and they're going to be tiny, like less than $1 million. So it's not a lot you can do with
it. It sounds like a lot of money, it's not.
If you're going to do a major project,
right,
that's not going to happen. So
no.
We're working with a really interesting project. Three entities, two state entities, and a large municipality to build a $4 billion bridge over the Mississippi River that will create opportunities for some of the most the poorest counties in the United States, the most racially divided counties in the United States. So while all of this economic development, job creation has centered around winning business and business development, we also do a lot of work like going into the Department of Transportation and advocating for this project and how it will impact this area. And
that's incredible.
And how difficult it is for, I think Davis County is unique in the country where there is such a collaborative relationship between the cities, the counties.
People are willing to wait their turn. They're willing to
wait
and support sister cities and projects.
I think along that I-15 corridor, there is a really good collaboration between these government entities. That's not the way it is in the rest of the country. We are really lucky to have such an inclusive and collaborative approach. But to bring together two states and a municipality on a $4 billion project like this, it never happens.
That is incredible. And so you are the muscle, the machine behind that collaboration?
So our team is inside of the Department of Transportation.
Okay.
At the end of 2021, the Congress passed the IIJA bill, the bipartisan infrastructure law, that allocated at that time $1.6 trillion to infrastructure projects. It's since increased now to over $2 trillion of infrastructure projects. And a lot of that money is still sitting there. And so we have gone into our contacts within the Department of Transportation, told the decision makers, you know, educated them on what this project is, the impact that it's going to have. And a big part of the IIJ objectives was, how do we create long-term economic prosperity for disenfranchised communities and demographics? So they loved this. They, I mean, when we showed them jobs and the infrastructure that would bring to these very...
Literally bridge those opportunities.
Bridge those opportunities. Mm-hmm. They loved it. They just thought this was fantastic. And then working with other agencies like the Department of Commerce to create natural consortia and jobs in that area, so that there is lasting economic impact in some of these areas with this investment.
Boy.
So, and we do, and
that's exciting.
It is.
That's really exciting.
You've done a lot of proposals in your business and over the years. So imagine these cities and counties and even the state agencies now, where they just would get this money through earmarks or through formula grants. Now they have to compete for this funding like a government contractor, where they have to do the capture work. They have to do real proposals that they've never done before. So, I mean, our team is all over the country now working various proposals and projects to capture funding for these organizations.
That is really exciting. And we're talking about this, I'm thinking, I don't know if everybody would be excited about a bridge being built, but we are excited because you see the potential generational impact that can happen when things are built that will bring communities opportunities. It's incredible.
It's been fun.
It's absolutely really incredible.
Every day, I mean, I love the name of your podcast, and every day I'm so excited to go to work and do what we do and see. I've been able to see now, having done this for 30 years, mm-hmm. and the long-term impact of our work and how we have influenced these.
Well, and I didn't realize estates as well, and municipalities. I didn't realize that you were a part of that growth. One thing that, so I listened to your podcast this morning, Behind the Wind, with Speaker Brad Wilson.
Yes.
And you were talking about how 20 plus years ago, you were sitting around the table with this group of great people.
Yes.
And you said you're the only one that hasn't become a politician. The work that you've done, hugely impactful, probably even more so on a national basis, Sean. That's impressive.
And that was a really special time when I look back on that. All of these individuals.
I do.
That we met here. We were meeting at the DATC in your city.
That's great.
And we had this idea, what can we do to impact legislation and create long-term legislative strategy, which at that time we just felt that Northern Utah didn't have any, did not have a good legislative strategy. And they all went on to do great things, and especially, I mean, Speaker Brad Wilson is maybe one of the most talented legislators in the history of our state. You look at the impact and the way that he is just quietly move the needle
but not by himself, like he said, you know, in the podcast. It wasn't by himself, and it wasn't without the work that you've done 20 years before.
Yeah, exactly.
Putting things into motion and processes and strategies in place. It's so neat.
It's been fun.
What a fun legacy to have. Well, not that you're leaving it, but just to continue on. You know, you're living it.
So let me ask you some questions. All of these years that you and I have known each other, and we participated in a lot of community events. You have done amazing things for the Air Force over the years. But tell me more about your background. How did you come to form this amazing business with Lee and...
Oh, okay.
And then I've got a lot of questions about your politics, too. Okay.
Let's see. Lee and I, we met, you know, when I was really young, got married young. I was 19 when we got married. And Lee was working for his adopted family, the family that sponsored him from Vietnam. And he was doing body work. And he was running the tow truck every night, and it was exhausting. My dad was an entrepreneur, but he'd had some struggles in business. And so I grew up thinking that you should be in business for yourself, because that's what I saw, even though it looked really hard. So it looked really hard. My belief system was, it's a good idea, but it's not something I actually wanted to do.
That's amazing.
Because, you know, you just watch your parents struggle, and you hear about all their stress around the dinner table every night. So Lee came to me. I was working for, early on in my career, I did commercial banking.
Okay.
And that was really fun. Then
wow.
we had our first child, and I did closings from home and, you know, tried to earn extra money as a mom and stuff. So that was fun. But Lee said, hey, I want to start my own business.
And he was still working.
He was working in the body shop.
In this body shop.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, why? And he said, because, you know, he'd been treated actually really unfairly. He doesn't talk about it very often, but the individual that had employed him at the time was very, very hard on Lee in terms of just judging him for his language and his ethnicity. I guess he just wasn't a very nice guy.
Wow.
And so Lee doesn't really talk about it in a negative way, but it was a hard situation. And after being berated over and over and belittled and talked down to by this guy that was his boss, he said, you know, I want to do something different. So he decided to work for my dad. So my dad had an office supply company.
Wow.
So
in Utah.
Uh-huh, in Utah. So he went to work for my dad, and then a printing company bought my dad's company. And then Lee had an opportunity to go up to Hill and sell printing and office supplies. And
oh, my goodness.
And it kind of just started from there. He'd go up there, and they'd say, hey, Lee, can you build a cabinet? Can you find someone to sell us a cabinet? And, you know, you're an entrepreneur. You say, absolutely.
We'll figure it out.
I can do that, yes.
I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to figure it out.
Right. You say, yes. How many do you need? And so Lee would just figure it out. He's a very smart guy. He's a hard worker.
He is. He's amazing.
And he's genuine. Lee can go up and listen to people talk about their lives for hours and hours and hours. He's just very kind and patient.
He's amazing.
Where I just like to cut to the chase. What can I do? What do you want? You know, I'm not as patient that way. So because of that, Lee has long-term, really great relationships.
Absolutely.
He's really good with people. People, he can buy a car from someone. And 10 years later.
They're still friends.
Yeah, they're still friends. Call him back and they remember him.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, so kind of just started from there. And we decided to do it ourselves. And we took the leap. And you know how that goes. It's hard.
So you said a lot. Let me just say this. I have 5 kids. I always had this fantasy, my kids are all going to be in the business. No, they don't want anything to do
right.
with it. They heard all those horror stories and said, no way, we're
right.
doing something else. All 5 of them said, we want nothing to do with the business. So I get that.
Yes.
But how did you decide, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur after just...
You
was
know,
it your being growing up in an entrepreneurial home?
I think it's just my personality, kind of. So Lee, when we first met, I wanted to be on the Supreme Court. I wanted to go to law school. That was my plan.
Yeah, I just
okay. That was my plan.
Believe that.
And then I meet Lee, who's just adorable and so wonderful. And he tells me, "Hey, you know, I came over as a little kid. I was a refugee from Vietnam, and I've got my family in Vietnam. There are 7 people in Vietnam that want me to sponsor them to America." So Lee tells me this story about how his 2 parents and his 5 siblings were in Vietnam, and he'd saved for 15 years, working at the body shop, running a tow truck all night long, enough money to send over with the paperwork to Vietnam to try to get the sponsorship papers for his family so that he could bring them over. And what had happened was he'd sent a cashier's check over to Vietnam to the government with the paperwork, and they said that they'd lost it.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think at the time, Lee had sent, gosh, it seems like it was $12,000, which to a kid in his, late teens, early, that's a lot of money,
that's a lot of money.
And it broke my heart. I just thought, ooh, how dare they do that to you? And so I fell in love with Lee, and I think I fell in love with his story also.
Amazing.
And so we got married, and we were able to get Orrin Hatch's office involved. And honestly, I think that that just really ignited my passion for the fact that people can get things done.
Wow.
You know, they were so helpful in terms of just really advocating for us. And then there was another organization called VASA, who was just a nonprofit organization. A guy, Dr. Kovalenko, who's passed on, was a great friend to Lee as well. So anyway, we sponsored them over. And then, you know, flash forward a couple years, and he says, I want to start a business. And I think I just thought, well, I don't like how you're being treated. You deserve more.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be disrespected. People shouldn't look down on you.
That's
they shouldn't judge you.
That's right.
And Lee had something to prove.
Amazing.
And he wanted to work hard, so.
Well, and you've been a big part of this. I mean, you have been at the center of this business for since the beginning, since I've known you. I mean, I didn't realize that, you know, the history with your dad's company and the and then Lee coming to work for him and then starting the business together. And but you know, you, I know you, both you and Lee have put so much time into building this amazing business, and And I see that in your politics, too. And you may remember I said to Speaker Wilson that I think part of the reason he's been such a great lawmaker is that he had a business foundation that he always remembered, hey, this is what it was like to build a strong balance sheet. This is, we've got to make payroll next Friday.
Right, you had that long discussion about that. And payroll's a big deal. People don't know how stressful payroll is if they've not actually had to come up with money.
It's unbelievable,
to make payroll.
Isn't it? And, mm-hmm. And nobody cares. They just, you know, they...
Right, they want their check.
They want their check on Friday and have no concept of all the things that happen to make that work.
It's true, and the responsibility that you feel for those families.
Oh my goodness. I mean it is, it's overwhelming,
huge.
Isn't it?
It is. Really, I mean, for their sure. insurance and for their benefits and, you know, to manage their 401k. And it's just a huge gift and an opportunity and a blessing, but it's also just such a big responsibility. So
tell me more about Rilex and the empire that you and Lee have built. It's incredible.
We have been really blessed along the way to have had great people that we've surrounded ourselves with. We've been very, very grateful and blessed to have great people who are willing to work for us, who know a lot more about things than we do, who are a lot more technical and a lot more, just a lot smarter. And so we've had great success there. I think that that's probably Lee's superpower, is just his ability to really connect with people. And so it's been a fun journey. It's been almost 20 years.
It's amazing.
And, you know, it comes with ups and downs and lots of great memories.
And most of your work is federal and defense, not just federal, but defense work. And I know you're doing a lot of, you're doing some classified work. You're doing a lot of cyber work.
As a new company, we've done commercial roofing.
What?
We put shingles on roofs.
No.
We have.
I didn't know that.
They say, can you do it? And you say, yes, we can.
Oh, my goodness.
And then you do it. We've done medical staffing, training and courseware development, where we've created training courses and modules and videography and all of the things that go along with training. So we've done a lot of different things.
It's amazing.
So it's been an interesting journey, and it continues.
We've worked for almost 30 years for one of these longtime clients. When they approached us, they had no past performance. They had no history. They were an Alaskan native-owned company.
Right. You did a podcast with them, right?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
They had no revenue, no history, nothing. They had nothing. And we started out saying, okay, how about grounds maintenance? Let's win a contract
You
do grounds maintenance. And so similar, it sounds like, to how you've built this amazing business. Now they're a $5 billion company.
Are you serious?
$5 billion a year. Sean. And they, most of their work is high-end engineering and,
incredible.
IT, software programming.
Because you guys sought them out and helped them?
Yep.
Are you still partner?
Still working with them. We're
That's
doing
fantastic.
A huge project for them
really?
Today. They're over $5 billion in revenue.
That is incredible. Absolutely awesome.
I see that you had
the ability to do that. That's neat.
What you and Lee have done as well. And it's, I mean, it sounds like we roofed a building to,
you know,
to do something.
You
and
say
I mean,
yes.
I never knew that story. I've just known you for the engineering work and support work that you've done.
Yeah, you just say yes. You say yes, we can, and then you figure it out.
What?
It's been fun.
I told you this the other day. How in the world do you fit everything into your day? You're this amazing entrepreneur and business leader and the mayor of this great city.
Little Kaysville, our cute little town.
And a mom. And I am so enamored
with how
you get everything done.
I'm really lucky. Like I said, we have great employees. Absolutely outstanding employees. And they take care of a lot of the things, the daily management things. I don't have to worry about HR. We've got someone that helps us with that, right. You know, payroll, things like that, that we used to do early on.
You did everything.
You know, you do everything.
You did everything.
You're the proposal writer and the researcher and the recruiter and you do everything.
And then you take
everything.
The trash out at night.
Yeah, exactly. You're also
you
the
do
janitor.
Everything.
You can't afford any of that. And so you just do it all. And now we've got great employees that help us for sure. And the mayor is supposed to be part-time. It's not.
I know how much time you spend here.
It's not, but it's really fun. So it's just been nice because our kids are both married, and you know, so I'm not taking kids to games or anything like that. So we just have more time.
It's amazing,
and it's fun, and you know, the flexibility that comes with being self-employed, it is nice because you can manipulate your schedule. And if you work at midnight, you work at midnight. But
and you do, I
then
know
you can
do.
Go. It is fun.
What? So do you have time to do anything other than being the mayor?
My bucket list, after talking to you about your Switzerland trips.
Oh, my goodness.
We are, we're doing it. We're going to do it. We're going to start.
You will love it.
We're going to start doing some fun things.
And
I think it's great that you've made that a priority with your family.
I felt that way for so long, too, that I can't leave the business. I can't. If I'm not here, then things aren't going to get done, and I don't feel that way anymore.
Similarly,
we've built this organization with great leaders, and I have no problem leaving and going and doing some things
awesome.
That I sort of look at it as deferred maintenance on all the things I wanted to do as a
right exactly
and didn't have the time or money and it wasn't the right time, but I am having fun. I've got a bucket list of things that I'm checking off as well. So when you're ready to go to Switzerland,
we want to do
help you put this together.
We definitely want to do that.
It's
that sounds
amazing.
Neat. What else is on your bucket list for trips?
I'm going to Japan.
I've never been to Japan.
In December. And
for work or?
To ski.
Really? To ski? Good
so
for
a lot
you.
Of, so my family, the one thing that was sacred in our family, and you talk to anybody that knows our family, this was so sacred that I would be working 100 hours a week, but we skied on the weekends.
That's awesome.
And it always happened since my daughter, who's over 30 now and has a little boy of her own. Since she was 2 years old, every weekend we skied, and all the kids grew up with this love of being in the mountains and skiing. And so I've centered a lot of these trips around skiing too, you know, going
That's
to
fantastic.
The mountains and building these memories with these amazing kids that are just phenomenal athletes. And so that's been fun. So we're going to
go.
We're going to go.
Your whole family?
To Niseko. It's three daughters and one son.
Oh, okay.
So pretty, it's not the whole group, but
as many as can
it's
come.
A pretty good group.
That's great.
That's going. Then we have been talking about this for over 10 years. We've been planning this and thought we were going to go before COVID, and then that got delayed. But so we're going to go
that sounds
into
amazing.
December, and we found this amazing ski guide that lived in Japan for 10 years and knows this area really well. So it's mostly backcountry skiing in the Niseko area.
That sounds incredible.
I can't wait. How about you?
What's
next?
Fantastic. Gosh, I was thinking, that sounds like a great trip. Lee and I are going to Boston for the WasteCon convention. So that'll be super exciting. Wasatch Integrated Waste Management. And
so
we're going to go.
Fun.
It is so fun, you know.
But Boston is my second favorite capital city in America.
It's a great place.
I think Salt Lake's my most favorite capital city, and then Boston is number two. So it is. You will have fun there. You've been there before?
One time.
So you know it's a great city, and I've spent a lot of time there too.
It'll be fun to go there, but you know, that's a city kind of trip.
How do you, get away from the challenges and maintain this energy that you have and optimism and just every time I'm with you, you're always smiling. You always have this positivity about you that is infectious. It really is. How do you you have a challenging day with the business or with the city, what do you do to clear your mind and get some relief from everything that you're dealing with?
You're very complimentary and very kind to say that. I don't know if my family would agree that I'm always in a good mood. I think that the thing that, as I was listening to your podcast with Brad, talking about, what tips and tricks have you both learned along the way? I think for me, I've learned that it's not personal.
No.
When somebody That's complains amazing. To me about something in the city or at work, it's easy to react to it and to think, well, I can't believe you said that. That was so rude. Rather than, okay, you're having a bad day. You ran over a pothole. Your garbage wasn't dumped. Someone took out your power because they ran into the power pole. I get it. That's all stressful. So I think just realizing that it's not personal. No one's attacking me personally. They're not complaining to me personally, really. And people don't necessarily expect you to do anything about it other than just listen. Except I will take that back. People do expect me to probably dump their trash and stuff like that.
I don't understand. I told you this the other day. I do not understand how you are so good at just taking all of these complaints, which is a lot of what your role is in as mayor.
Yes,
and
it's fun though.
We're going to fix this. We're going to go through this. Or this is the strategy. This is the plan.
I just think people.
That's a gift.
Well, you're nice to say that. But I think people just need hope. They need someone to take 5 minutes and to say, that's awful. Let's see what we can do to help you. I think that's what Senator Hatch's office did for us many years ago when we were trying to bring Lee's family over. It was very discouraging. We didn't have any money. We lived in an apartment. They had taken Lee's life savings and just spent it or lost it or whatever happened to it. And for us to be able to call Senator Hatch's office and say, this is our situation, and for them to say, okay, we can help. It's just a really neat thing to be able to do for other people.
Was that your conduit into politics, do you think, that experience that you had with Senator Hatch's office?
I think that was one of them. The other was my mom, when we were young, was very politically active. She never ran for public office. But I remember going around with her throughout the neighborhoods. It's when cable TV was a big thing, and she thought it was evil, and it was pornographic,
it
and it was going to ruin our world, and she was probably right. And I remember going around with her door to door, handing out flyers.
Goodness.
And I remember when abortion this is still a big topic. I remember those flyers that were very graphic. As a little kid, my mom would hand them out and go door to door. So I think she kind of inspired the ability to make a difference with me.
Do you have bigger political aspirations, Senator Tran or Governor Tran?
No. Right now, my biggest aspiration is to get a Trader Joe's in Kaysville.
Okay, really?
I'm not kidding you. Yes, really? Yes, yes. This is our big campaign. We're trying really hard. It would be life-changing for our sweet little community. The sales tax revenue is great for Trader Joe's. It's a niche market. And so I've been talking to different, I've been on KSL and a couple different news stations, Doug Wright, Rod Arquette, they've all let us talk.
Amazing.
Not Doug Wright, sorry. David Dujanovic.
I lived in Kaysville from 1992 until 2003. So a little over 10 years. And when I moved to Kaysville in 1992, there wasn't street lights.
Mm-hmm, I remember that.
There was one little grocery store, Bowman's, the old Bowman's grocery store, the Clover Club factory. Mm-hmm. That was it. And everything was, we used to joke, we called it the Commonwealth of Kaysville. And I used to say to our neighbors and friends, if Kaysville could print their own money, they would.
Right.
It was true. So different. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago, and what you have done, what the vision of this city and is amazing now. I mean, you have become, your city has become, I really think one of the crown jewels of Davis County, and the planning and strategy that you've had on the west side especially.
I wish I had anything to do with that. I mean, that was visionary, and I'm so grateful. People were willing to fight that fight because it was a battle to get a Smith down there and to make some of those hard decisions.
I know. Well, and the families that controlled controlled most of Kaysville for multi generations, and it's amazing what has happened to Kaysville in the last even 10 years.
It is. It's changed so much.
Amazing.
But it's a great place.
So what else do you do for fun? When you're not...
Gosh, play with our granddaughter. She's almost two. Amazing. That's, you know how that,
is,
that
amazing.
Is.
It's
really
it's so fun.
And we, you know, Lee makes me laugh. Honestly, he's fun.
Great guy.
He is. He can be fighting mad, and then he wants to go get ice cream. You know, he's just a really... He's really able to just switch gears really fast. And so he's just a fun guy to hang out with. So we go out to dinner. I mean, we don't do anything exciting, really. But we've got great friends and great family, and we're surrounded by a lot of family here in Davis County. It's a great place. Sean, I have really enjoyed talking
Thanks
to you.
So much
what
for
are
having
your me. Okay, so you're this incredibly successful guy. You've built business. You've built a huge business, employed thousands of people, changed the trajectory for states and cities and the government. What's next for you?
I don't know. I'm having fun doing this. I
30 years did, though,
and I've been doing this for over 30 years. I've had one job for 30 years. It's really unique, but I don't know. I don't have this exit strategy. I really don't. In a lot of ways, I feel like, okay, we're just now starting to see some of this potential and the opportunity that exists to have an impact in some of these areas that we're working in, really destitute parts of the United States, in rural areas, in urban blight areas. We've done a lot of strategy around some international opportunities, which I see is, it really is exciting to me. And as I said, I think when I get up and it's not fun and I don't have the passion for it anymore, I'll do something else. But I can't imagine me doing anything
really
but what
it.
I'm doing. Every morning, I can't wait to get to the office. I can't wait to...
That's fantastic.
Like, see,
it's still exciting.
What are we gonna? What exciting things are we going to do today? What are we going to win today? What are we going to do to create intergenerational impact? And that just keeps me excited.
Well, that's it's more than just having a job or a company.
That's right.
It's making a difference.
Oh, it is. It is for sure.
Which you could also do politically. Do you have any aspirations politically?
No, I really don't.
You really don't?
I don't.
You should. You'd be so great
no,
at it.
You and I see each other at the Capitol a lot and in some of the various political circles. And I really admire what you and Speaker Wilson and President Adams and some of the amazing politicians that I get to work with every day, they have this gift that I admire so much, but I don't see that I have that. I think you're right. I think having this synergistic relationship with the political civil service.
Mm-hmm. I can see how that's so beneficial.
Has been amazing that we've had these great relationships and so necessary to accomplish the vision that we have.
It's true.
Some of these projects. So I also feel that I would lose that having to really be responsible for a constituency.
Got it. That makes
two. So.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it's really, I'm glad that we're doing this interview because people, you know, they see certain people on TV or press releases or tweets or something, but they don't see everything that goes behind the scenes and
exactly
it is required to make things work. And it's great partnerships with businesses that have vision and planning and the ability to really execute.
Definitely.
Nothing would happen without you're not even a small business anymore, but without business.
No, that's right. And I think we've done a good job of changing thinking, especially over the last 10 years. The work that we've been doing had never been done by a for-profit entity. I mean, it was always this kind of social impact that we were doing or economic development work, or it had typically had been through either a government entity or mm-hmm. a nonprofit or some academia organization. And so showing the Department of Labor and Department of Commerce, the SBA, the Department of Transportation, we're a for-profit entity mm-hmm. that we're going to get results. We have expectations and
payroll and
payroll and
right,
all of that. And
right.
we will get results mm-hmm. we will meet. And most of these organizations had never heard of, wait a minute, you're going to help 5,000 unemployed veterans find jobs. You're going to work with thousands of TANF eligible individuals. You're going to work with, every month we put 400 individuals with disabilities into high wage jobs. That kind of
that I know of has
typically not been done for a for-profit entity. And I think that there's really something, I'd love to see more companies, corporations say, this is our work, this is our role, partnering with government and partnering mm-hmm. with, typically a nonprofit's going to be involved in some of this work, as you know, but there is something magic about the for-profit entities that have the right relationship and formula with government.
Something that you kind of alluded to before is the fact that a lot of the success comes from having business experience. And I think that's maybe what you're kind of talking about as well. A lot of these government agencies are staffed by great people, but they've never worked
passionate
or had their own businesses.
Amazing, passionate people.
Great people, but they don't have the vision because they haven't been on the other side of that. They haven't created jobs. They've created programs.
And had that accountability.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And had that, you'll love this. I mean, I remember one time when we first started doing this economic development and, growing up in this business, we were working with some companies that had no sense of humor. You know who I'm talking about.
Right.
It rhymes with Lockheed, Boeing, Raytheon, right? You have a contract. You better meet that contract. If you don't meet your objectives, they're going to come after you. They would be furious if you did not meet your objectives. So when we first started going down this path, where I remember being in a state that had a significant budget shortfall, and it was the same thing I heard working with Lockheed and AT&T and some of these companies, where they would say the same thing. We have got to capture $1 billion of new business, $2 billion. Well, I was hearing this from this state agency. We've got a $2 billion budget shortfall. We don't know what we're going to do. And so building that, coming from this history where we had to make this work. It was our contractual obligation. And they had never heard a company say, well, okay, we'll commit to raising that $2 billion of tax, of revenue,
probably
of
blew
tax.
Them out, it, what, right? it just blew their
and,
minds.
And we would commit to metrics around job creation. We would commit to, versus so often a lot of these organizations, like I said, passionate about what they're doing, not accountable, not metric-driven, mm-hmm. not quantitative in their strategy. And I think that that's what's differentiated us over the years.
Well, it's really worked for you, Sean. I mean, gosh, your company's incredible.
Thank you.
And you are too. So thanks for sitting down with me.
Thanks for having me.
It's been fun to talk to you.
This afternoon. Like I said, I've admired your work in business and politics, and just that you are this most optimistic person I've ever met. You're the name of your podcast. It's perfect.
Thank you for saying that.
This is illustrative of your personality.
Well, thank you. My kids think it's really corny, so I appreciate that. That's
so what?
Validating.
My kids think I'm crazy too.
isn't that the job, right? We're supposed to be a little crazy.
It's fine. I keep doing it anyway.
Exactly. It gets us out of bed and gives us something to look forward to. Well, thank you.
Thank you. It's been fun.
To all my podcast listeners, thank you for listening. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Please leave comments and please leave suggestions for future guests. And most importantly, subscribe. Thank you.